listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron. Wayne is out this week, but he'll be with us next week. So we'll have a special guest and, I suppose, co-host today. So what a blessing that is. So, folks, I'm real excited to have Dr. Alan Lyka with us on the show today. Dr. Lyka is a coach and a speaker and has a great story to tell. And so we're just really honored, sir, to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on the Concierge Coaches Show.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Bruce. It's always a pleasure to be on the radio, and your show is one of the best.
Yes, indeed, indeed. So so thank you very much for that. So so a lot of our listeners, Doctor, a lot of our listeners are either coaches themselves, or many folks are contemplating becoming a coach. And the other segment is kind of consumers of coaching services. So that would comprise a lot of our audience on the show. So with that in mind, I know that once I started reading your material, that the first thing that really got me was you had an episode of drop foot and the horrible misdiagnosis. Can you talk a little bit about
Sure. You know, all this started, I was a world leading cosmetic surgeon. I was on podiums around the world. I was doing a lot. And in 2003, I decided to take a vacation with my wife and my youngest daughter. We went to Disneyland, the happiest place on earth. And surprisingly, at the end of one day, my wife turned to me and she said, "What's wrong with you, hon?" You know, I was taken aback, Bruce. For once in my life, I hadn't said anything wrong. I hadn't done anything wrong. I hadn't even thunk anything wrong. But my wife persisted. She said, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "I don't think anything." She said, "Well, you have a dropped right foot." And sure enough, my right foot was dropped. It was flapping on the pavement with each step that I was taking. Now, it was a hot, steamy day that it can be in that time of the year in Disneyland. So I thought it was nothing, and I explained it to her. She said, "No, you're not going to get away with that," she said. "When we get back, you better get it checked out." So, Bruce, what do you do when your significant other gives you that ultimatum?
Better go in.
Exactly.
Get it checked out.
So I started seeing doctors. I started with my friends that were doctors. They couldn't find anything wrong. So they sent me to more doctors, and they sent me to more doctors, and they sent me to more doctors. And you know what doctors do when they can't find anything wrong?
Pick something.
Well, what they do is either pick something or they do more tests. And yeah. I think they did every test known to man. I think they even invented some tests that weren't even done then. So they did every test, and still at the end of the day, they could find absolutely nothing wrong. So they got together as a group, and they said, "I'm going to send you to a world-leading neurologist." Now, a neurologist is a brain guy. He's supposed to have all the answers to these difficult questions. So they sent me to one of these, this world-leading neurologist, and I walked in, and I said, "Hi." He said, "Hi back. You better be sitting down when I tell you this." I said, "Why? I have a dropped right foot." He said, "No, you don't. You have ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. Get your affairs in order. You have 6 months to live." I was befuddled, that I shot back at him, "Is there a way to prove this diagnosis?" And he said, "Of course, an autopsy."
Good Lord.
Good Lord. He had the bedside manner of Dr. House that used to be on TV.
Yeah.
And I slammed out of there, and I said, "I'm not going to die to prove you wrong." But you know, when you go through a catastrophic event like that, you go through an emotional response. You go through a grief reaction. You go through anger. And I was angry. I was angry at the world. How dare he say I was going to die? How dare I be given a life-ending sentence? I was too young. I was at the top of my career. How dare he? Yeah. You go through bargaining. Oh, God, please don't let this happen. I'll do anything if you don't let this happen. You go through denial. You know, denial is when you say, there's nothing wrong. I can do anything. I can keep doing everything that I've always done, Bruce. And so I kept on working. I'd work 12, 24 hours a day. I'd say, look, if I'm going to go, I'm going to at least have something at the end of the day to show for it. But then you go through depression. And depression is the worst, Bruce. That's when you can lie in bed all day long, staring at the ceiling, and you literally say, oh, my God, why should I get out of bed? I'm going to die anyhow. Have you ever been depressed, Bruce?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. It's the worst. It's the worst. Yeah. You can't eat. You can't sleep. You go. Your days turn into nights. Your night turns into days. And there's no meaning to your life. And during those black moments, Bruce, you even contemplate suicide. Because if you're going to die from ALS, you won't let that happen because it's an awful death. You end up choking to death. You end up not moving. It's an awful death. It's a creeping death. So I before I went to kill myself, I went to my wife and said, dear, I'm not doing so well. I said, what do I have? And my wife's a doctor. And she said, I haven't got the faintest idea, but you'll figure it out. You're smart. I said, dear, I've seen every doctor on the planet. What am I supposed to? She said, perhaps you haven't seen the right doctor yet. So 2003, something brand new was invented, Bruce. You might have heard about it. It's called the internet. You ever heard of that beast?
Yeah.
Once or twice a day or once a thousand times a day now. So back then, it was very primitive. You had to get on with dial-on connections.
Yep.
So your computer would talk to another computer, and it would go for about 15 minutes. And then when you connected, you had to use a very primitive language like DOS to search the internet, because there weren't these search engines like Dr. Google or Dr. Yahoo or Dr. MSN to help you out. You didn't have any of that. And thank goodness I had friends that were nerds. But back then, the internet's like it is now. It's got the world's best resources, full of the best books, but it's got the world's worst garbage cans too. So you got to be careful about what you get into. And my friends found a doctor in Colorado Springs, Colorado, by the name of David Martz. Now, David had a story very similar to mine, but he got worse much more rapidly. He was on his deathbed within 2 weeks of his diagnosis. So David was a well-known hematologist, a blood doctor, and he was loved by everybody. And doctors from around the world were coming up to say goodbye to David. And a doctor from Texas came up by the name of Dr. Harvey. And he looked at David and he said, David, I don't think you have ALS. David whispered, because that's all he could do at that time. He said, what do I have? The doctor from Texas said, I think you have chronic Lyme's disease. I think you've been bitten by a tick, and it's causing a neurological illness that's mimicking ALS. And David said, what do I do? And the doctor from Texas said, you don't need to do anything. But if I'm right, I'm going to start you on antibiotics. And within a couple of weeks of treatment, you're going to be better. And that's when a miracle happened, Bruce. He got markedly better. Within weeks, he was back to his normal self. He was so good, he wanted to explore this wonderful, crazy disease. And he started a clinic called the Rocky Mountain Disease Clinic. And he was able to see thousands of people with this crazy disease. And so I knew I had to get in touch with David. So I phoned every hospital in Colorado Springs. And, you know, any doctor can get in touch with any doctor if he wants to. All he has to do is explain who he is. I got in touch with David at the Methodist Hospital, and we talked for hours. And David said, can you come down and see me? Well, it just so happened to be it was Thanksgiving weekend in Canada. You know, ours is in October. So right. I told David, I can't come down. My wife will kill me. She's invited 50 people over. And David said, aren't there any planes in Canada? He wasn't going to let me off that easy. So I went to my wife, my hat in my hand, and I said, dear, I'm not going to make it here for Thanksgiving. She said, why? We've got 50 people coming over. And I said, dear, there's a doctor in Colorado Springs who claims he can help me. And that's when my wife did a 180-degree turn. She said, what are you waiting for? I'll pack your bags for you. I'll drive you to the airport. Come on, stop wasting time. So I went down to Colorado Springs. I flew from Edmonton to Denver, which is a great 2.5-hour flight. And then I got on a flight from Denver to Colorado Springs, which is a rinky-dink puddle jumper. You ever been on a rinky-dink puddle jumper, Bruce?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, the flight on this one is particularly bad because the air comes off the desert at the end of the day, and that causes turbulence and eddies. So the plane will be flying along, and all of a sudden, it'll drop 100 feet, and then it'll climb back up, and then it'll drop 200 feet, and then it'll climb back up, and then it'll drop 300 feet. So there you were on your pathway, and you know you were green as anything. Thank goodness it's only a 15-minute flight. So I crawled off that plane, and there was David on the tarmac to meet me. And he, back then, they didn't have all the restrictions that are going on now, where you can't get within a mile of a plane unless you have every other security precaution known to man. But back then, he was a well-known doctor. I was a well-known doctor. There's no problem. So I walked, I crawled off the plane, and David said, you're not looking so good. And I said, I'm not feeling so good. And he said, I think it's a metaphor of what you're going through. So we went to a coffee shop and he talked for hours and he said, I think history is repeating itself. And so he started me on treatment, and that's where I'm here to this day. You know, I'm doing fine. I won't say I'm perfect. I have a weak right hand and a weak right leg from this disease. But the thank goodness thing is I've been able to become left-handed, and I can do everything that I ever did. In fact, from 2003 to 2019, I continued to practice medicine. I continued to practice dermatology, and I still led the field until I retired at that time.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Was it a similar course of treatment with antibiotics, or was it other...
It was a couple of things. One was antibiotics. And then later in treatment, there's a medication called disulfiram that was added. Now, disulfiram. Yeah, now that's a funny drug because it's called disulfiram because it's two sulfa molecules stuck together. Now, the brilliant people studying Lyme disease studied all things that might work with it. And they said, well, this drug, because it has two sulfa molecules stuck together, will probably work. And it has worked very, very well, you know. So, you know, the beautiful thing about Lyme's disease is people are studying it. When I started, people really argued that chronic Lyme's disease did not exist. In fact, you'll find that still is an argumentative thing. But now that we have chronic COVID disease, more people are buying. There can be chronic phases of every disease. Yeah. And so they now understand better than they did then that these diseases can go on.
Did you run any, do you have any kind of hard neurological things that might have shown in a CAT scan?
Yeah, you know, I've had more CAT scans than I could shake a stick at, more MRIs that they could shake a stick at. And there's
like lesions,
there's
those types.
Four little scars in the base of my brain. Okay. Now, the problem is scars are scars. They can't tell where they came from. Okay. So it's not multiple sclerosis, but it's something else. It definitely is a scarring process. And, you know, as long as I stay on my medications, I'm under control. So I'm pretty sure we had chronic Lyme's disease. All the tests showed that. There's a test done by Igenix Lab that What they do is look for antibodies to the spirochete that causes this, and they found it was positive on 16 out of 32 factors. So the answer is it's pretty likely. You know, there isn't a black and white test that tells you you had this, but all evidence is pointing towards that. You know, Bruce, when you being an investigator and someone, you always have to have evidence that points towards that. You never can say something is definitively black and white.
Correct. Right. I was looking at it from an evidentiary perspective to see if there were lesions, you know, lesions that kind of mimic, like you said, a multiple sclerosis or some other type of thing. And this is, I mean, I think it's the first time I'd heard of this. I hadn't really, of course, synthesized it or thought about it at length, nor have I known anybody that has had to deal with this.
Well, you know, when I go around the world lecturing, it always seems to be when I'm in a room, there's always three or four people that come up and tell me they know of somebody with chronic Lyme disease.
Yeah.
They always tell me they know somebody. So I refer them to ILADS, ILADS, which is an organization of individuals that are very bright. They know more about this disease. They have conferences. They study this disease. They have people that they could refer them to. And that's what I mean about you have to know the right resources in all this, because unfortunately, the world, that internet still is full of garbage cans and sure. Still has a lot of crap in it. So I don't want people to go to the wrong camp. If my story is resonating with anybody out there, I encourage people to check out ILADS.
Okay. Absolutely. And you know what? I'll try to put this in the show notes as well. When we publish the show notes on iHeartRadio and Apple iTunes and stuff like that, Apple Podcast rather. So good to know. So then now I know you have a book you wrote with Tinka. I mean, does that spawn your coaching or kind of?
Let me tell you a little bit about this. You know, when you go through something that I've done, like I've done, Bruce, you start looking around, you start wondering, you know, why am I on this planet? You start thinking, did I love, did I really matter? Did I really do the things that I'm going to do? And, you know, when I started doing many of these things, I started to give back to society. And one of the things I did was I sponsored an event called Women of Distinction by the YWCA, where I honored women in society because, you know, women, even to this day, Bruce, don't get the kudos that they really deserve. So I sponsored this gala event, and a wonderful lady applied for one of the awards. Her name was Harriet Tinka. And Harriet had a story similar to mine, but very, very different. You know, she was a fashion model walking the runways of New York and Milan and Italy, but she grew tired of the industry. You know, it's a dog-eat-dog industry, and after a couple of years, you got to get out. So she went back to school to learn accounting, which is her second love. So she went to the University of Calgary in Calgary, Alberta, and she was befriended by a psychopath. Now, that psychopath became very possessive and ended up kidnapping her, stabbing her, and leaving her for dead. Now, Harriet ended up in the hospital, and she was beside herself. She was so depressed, and she met a little girl by the name of Amber. Amber was wheeling down the hallway in a wheelchair, and she asked Harriet her story, and Harriet told her story, and Amber immediately gave her hell, saying, you know, you should be ashamed of yourself, Harriet, because I'm a girl that lost the use of my legs in a car accident. I lost both of my parents, but I'm going to do something about myself. She said, I challenge you to do something about yourself. And Harriet said, what? And she said, write a book. So Harriet knew this award was coming up, so she applied for it. And she said, could I take you for lunch, Dr. Like? And I said, sure. And she said, well, maybe we can write a book together. And that's where we came up with this idea of writing this book called The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life. It tells our stories in more detail, but it tells about the things we learned as a result of our stories. You know, as I say, we really got a chance to explore the world. We really got a chance to see what the world was all about. And what we establish in this book is 13 golden pearls, the 13 golden pearls that people really should live their lives by and really know their lives by. And that's why we put them in this nice little book. And, you know, sure, I would love everybody to come to see me as their coach. I would sure love to see them lecture on their stage if they need somebody to talk on their stage. But, you know, that's not possible. There's only 365 days in a year. There's only so much you can do, Bruce. So that's why I put a lot of my knowledge in this book for people to get it and really find out more and live a more successful life. Because, you know, I realize it's not what happens to you. It's what you do with what happens. And if you really understand that principle, you really understand that, and you realize you only have so many days on this planet that you have to live your life to the fullest. You will seize the day, so to speak, and make sure each and every day matters. Live it with tenacity, live it with joy, live it with happiness, and make sure you take each and every day and live it like it's the last on earth. Because if you don't, you'll have cheated yourself. You really will have done so much. You know, I know there's people out there that are depressed. I know there's people out there that are having a hard time. COVID has done a lot to people's headspace out there. And we're seeing a mini time in people's lives where they're going through a distress syndrome like I went through in my life. They're going through anger. Look at all the anger we're seeing every day, Bruce, out there. It's all over the news. It's every day where we hear people going through bargaining and saying, oh, God, I'll do anything if I can get out of these doldrums. We see they're going through denial and really trying to deny anything's going on. We saw that throughout COVID, and we see it now that people are denying the facts as they actually exist and are seeing depression. We're seeing mass depression. I think you know, it's probably gone up from 10 to 20% to even 30 to 50% of people out there. And it's so drastic it's going on in our society. It's just beyond belief.
It is. I was going to ask, and I'm not going to ask about the pearls per se. I know we want to leave that for folks to buy your book and everything. Is there an element in those pearls that you talk about that talks about resilience?
Oh, yes. You know, I talk about tenacity all the time, you know, because I think tenacity is one of the most basic traits that everybody needs. And everybody really needs to uncover their tenacity. You know, every time I have my own show and my own podcast, I tell people about I bring on guests that have gone through the storm, that have gone through the storm themselves, and they've come out better on the other side. And it's funny how nature or the great universe treats us this way, that it's the greatest storms that give us our greatest victories. It's the greatest times in our life that give us those times that are so important for us. So those challenges make us stronger. You know, when a hurricane comes along and so on, the trees that get destroyed are not usually the great oak trees and the greatest trees, because they have a root system that's so integrated with everything around them that it's very hard to get them out. Now, that's what tenacity does to us. It allows us to have things that are us to be stronger. It allows us to be better people as a result of it. And that tenacity comes out. You know, challenge us, bring on that tenacity. You know, for a diamond to be made, it has to go through fire and brimstone and pressure. Now, in my book, I refer to pearls of being made. Now, it goes through a similar process. A little grain of sand gets inside the wall of an oyster, and that oyster walls it up and makes these beautiful golden pearls. Now, in the South Pacific, golden pearls actually exist. The exact in wow. Thailand, etc. They're rare, and a single solitary golden pearl sounds upward of $10,000. Now, can you picture how beautiful that is, and the stress and strain that that oyster has to go through in making it?
I'm glad you're saying this, because I was looking at your media, and I saw the golden pearl, and I thought, is there such a thing as a golden pearl?
Yeah. Yeah, it actually does exist, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful beyond belief.
I can imagine.
Yeah,
that is that's fantastic. You know, I love how you use the word tenacity. You know, and I think in folks that are going through executive coaching and other types of coaching, they talk about resilience and being able to, you know, weather the storms, as we might say, and so. And so I like that tenacity, because the tenacity, I think, to me anyway, shows I'm not giving up. You know, I'm going to continue. I'm tenacious, right?
Know, the best way to bring out your tenacity is not to go through the storm yourself. It's to have a coach that helps to show you along the way, because, coaching brings out the best in people. You know, when I was a young doctor and I was just starting into cosmetic dermatology, the whole field was brand new. There was nobody that knew it, and it was a whole new business. So I looked for coaches. I couldn't find anybody in my area. So I found some great business coaches, and the business coach I turned to was a fellow by the name of Dan Kennedy, who is one of the greatest business models and business coaches in the world. So I used to go down to Akron, Ohio to learn from him. And I'd go there every three times a year for a number of years. And he taught me the business of cosmetic surgery. He taught me how to be the best at it. So that's how I was able to climb to the ranks of being one of the best cosmetic doctors, is because of the coaching I had. It was great to have that. And, you know, it's the same thing with everybody in life. If you are Tiger Woods and want to be a great golfer, you need to have coaches. In fact, a person like Tiger Woods would probably have three or four coaches now. It's the same thing with every great basketball player or right. every great hockey player. You know, I know hockey, and I love hockey. I was just down in Los Angeles, and I was able to take in a game of the LA Kings versus the Edmonton Oilers. And it was great to see how the differences in the two cities. But the beauty of it is each and every great player has it. In Edmonton, we have one of the greatest hockey players on earth by the name of Connor McDavid. Well, he has a skating coach. He has a motivation coach. He has five or six coaches to keep him on the top of his game. And that's what I'm not advocating everybody have five or six coaches, but I'm saying you really need at least one coach in your life to help you along the way. Because if you don't, you're never going to get to that peak. You're never going to be able to maintain that peak performance. You're never going to be able to get to that level that you can stay on. And when life's challenges come out, and they will come out, they always will come out, that's where you're going to be challenged the most. And if you have somebody in your camp that understands you and that knows you, they can help you through those challenges and help bring you up to the next level. I've always found life is just like being a roly-poly. You're going to get knocked down and you're going to bop up again. You're going to get knocked down and you're going to get bopped up again. And you're going to get knocked down and you're going to bop it up again. And I also found life is like being in a great football field, and you got to walk from one end to the other. But the problem with the game is you don't know the rules. And along the way, there's all these shiny objects that are going to be trying to attract you and get you. And they're going to try to grab your attention and try to drag you off that path of you trying to get from one end of the field to the other. And unless you have somebody that keeps you on that path, it's going to be pretty hard to keep on that game plan to make sure your game plan is going to be good and stay that way. As you know, look at what COVID did to everybody during their game plan. It totally got thrown offline, and people had to go to their houses for 2 years and stuff like that. And still people are resistant to going back to the way it was before. And life is like that, that always there's like, you know, the brains in this world are saying we're going to go through a recession. Well, you know, that's another thing that, you know, we get a recession about every 7 years. You know, that is either good or bad, depending on how you look at it.
Because
there's so many great companies that have been made in the middle of a recession. It's beyond belief, you know, but you have to be willing to accept those challenges and make sure those challenges are there. And you got to know what to do when those challenges come on. You got to know how to zig when others zag.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Evidently be able to pivot and move accordingly. And so I've, you know, kind of with my coaching practice, the clients, you know, like you said, change with the culture. I mean, in the beginning when we had our 2008, 9, 10 housing crash recession, if you will here, you know, seeing a lot of clients, men pivoting and trying to find a career doing something, you know what I mean? Some of the jobs here, were outsourced to other countries and those things. So we had a lot of engineers and other technical people that were replaced pretty quickly. Right. We had a telecom corridor, remember Nokia cell phones and all that. And they thought that would last forever. And man, you know, like you said, just through culture and change, you know, that there's these, you know, market corrections is another way. It's a market correction. So it just, like you said, depends on how you
well,
view.
You know, we've had all these recessions, and really, you know, everybody remembers the 2008 because it was big. But, you know, we've had one almost every 7 years. Of some sort, either a major or a minor. But, you know, we've had the dot-com correction. We've had every one of them has been pretty substantial and caused people a lot of grief and caused people having a lot of problems. There was the recession of 1969 to 1970. There was another one in 73 to 75. There was another one in the early 1990s, you know, early 2000s, another one. You know, it's so many of them that we tend to remember the biggest ones. But boy, each one of these has been a challenge where each one of these have caused considerable problems for people in North America and around the world.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So being able to, you know, I think we were, some people just get too involved in their comfort and as you and I both know, there's always going to be discomfort around the corner, taking the shape of either an economic crisis, a personal or emotional challenge, your own or my own health, you know, whatever. Or something with a family member. So there's always, you know, going to be something, you know, if you're just coming out of a storm, that's great, but there's going to be another one coming sometime.
You know, in the last couple of weeks, we had three minor banks taken over by the government of the United States and another bank in the world, Credit Suisse, being bought out because it was going to be insolvent. So there are a lot of things, you know, you're starting to hear the drum beats on the Potomac again. You're starting to hear some scary things going on right now.
Yeah.
And I understand that this is going to be a challenging time for a lot of people. It might not cause massive unemployment like it did before, because the economy seems to be different that way. But there certainly are going to be challenges. You look around the world and how many people are striking to get some of their losses. You look at the inflation that's going on. I think anybody looking at their grocery bill prices these days versus what it was a year or two ago are really shaking their head. When they go out for dining, they're saying, oh my goodness, this is so much more expensive than it was just a little while ago.
So true. So true. And having to deal with that. Okay, well, let's go on to, I know we have a little bit of time left here, 15 or so minutes. Talk a little bit about your coaching or speaking. What do you do more of, if you don't mind me asking? Is it you do more speaking than coaching, or coaching than speaking, or kind of a 50-50 thing?
I think it's a 50-50 thing. And you know, when I speak now, it's not like I used to before going on stages. Many people will welcome a virtual coach, and a virtual coach and a virtual speaker are wonderful things, because, you know, you don't have to leave your den or your living room. I don't need to. If you're in a business, I can speak to a large group of people just by this media, and I can really make it a great experience for you. And when I'm coaching, I can do one-on-one coaching this way around the world as well. So it helps people get to a level without having to leave their homes, without leaving their environments. And people get a lot of value out of it this day and age. So the COVID changed the world a bit. You know, we have these wonderful programs like StreamYard. We have these other programs like Zoom that help us to do these things in such a way that it helps people to open the door. Now, I love speaking because I can influence 30 to 50 to 100, 800 people all at once, which really makes a lot of difference. And you know, I'm known as the doctor of positivity. I'm known as the doctor of happiness. And you know, since I retired, I took 3 certifications in happiness. One from Harvard, one from Yale, and one from the Lucky Institute in Denmark. So there are actually certifications in happiness. Now, it's a funny world where we now have to, we think of happiness and needing to be certified in it. But, you know, science has come around and shown how much importance happiness is in everybody's lives. It used to be thought, you know, you work hard, you make a lot of money, and you're going to be happy. Okay. They got it wrong. They got that whole wrong. You've got to be happy, then you'll work hard, and then you'll make lots of money. So you got to start with happiness first. It starts with your life. It starts with everything around you. It starts with doing the things that are important to make you happy. And you know, one of the things you can do so easily to increase your brain chemicals to make you happier is to go for a brisk walk 3 times a week, Bruce. Can you do that? Of course you can. But that is one of the simplest things to make people happier and change your brain chemistry. Another one is something called mindfulness, which means learning how to meditate. Now, if you can meditate for 10 minutes 3 times a week, your brain will get literally rewired, and the chemicals in your brain will get rewired so that you can change the way you look at things. And, you know, it's how you look at things that makes all the difference. It's the way you look at things that make all the difference. Right. You know, I finally broke down and read Viktor Frankl's book. And Viktor Frankl's book is one of the greatest books of all time. Now, Viktor Frankl was in a concentration camp in Germany during the Second World War. And he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. And in that book, he teaches that they can take everything away from you, But as long as you have a purpose, as long as you have a meaning, you can never lose your sight for things in the world. And that is what I find is so important for people, is to have that purpose and meaning in their life, to have that happiness in their life. And that's how a coach can help you in a lot of ways doing it. You know, in my book, I talk about purpose, and I talk about a Japanese concept called Ikigai. And I'm not sure if you have heard about it, but it's a brilliant concept, which basically means your purpose in life. And it means there are different spheres in your life that are important to make your purpose important. First, start with what you're good at. Second, start with the things that you can be paid for. Start with the things that you love to do, and bring them all together. When there's an overlap of all these circles in your life, that's your ikigai, that's your purpose in life. And bring it together so your purpose in life will be so important for you.
Awesome. I like it. So it's what you're good at, what you love to do, and then explain the paid for part.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing about it, I'm just going to bring up my book here. Okay. I don't know if your people will see it, but I'll just show the diagram.
There it is.
All right. And this diagram is on page 56 of my book. So so what you need to do is that which you love, that which you can be good at, that which the world needs, and that what you can be paid for. Overlap of all those things in the center is your ikigai. So, you're not going to be able to be purposeful if you can't get paid for it.
You're right.
You got to be. But again, if you're doing exactly what you hate doing and are getting paid for it, that is not going to make you very happy either. It's not going to make your purpose in life what it should be. You literally have to find the overlap of those things. Otherwise, you're not going to be happy with all this. You're not going to find your purpose, and your search for meaning is not going to be very important. But remember, it's not about working hard, making lots of money, and then you're going to be happy. Remember, you got to be happy first. Then you're going to work hard. Because if you're happy and really enjoy it, you're going to work as hard as you can to make that job so important for you. And it's going to be something. But again, you got to be knowledgeable. You know, if you don't have the skill set, if you're like me with two left feet, you're not going to be a dancer. So definitely don't try to do something that you can never be proficient at, never be good at. You got to realize there are limitations, physical and mental, from what you can do as well.
Absolutely. I really like that. I know, I forget Don's last name, but the Strengths Finder, the Strengths Finder guide, and that was part of coaching or whatever, but I like the, combining some of those other elements. I like that what the world needs element too, or what's of benefit to others, that's really, really good too. I'm glad you shared that.
I thought that was an important concept for us. Yeah. I think it was a very important concept for your listeners to take home, because that concept is something that people can integrate into your life. And I'd encourage them to pick up a copy of my book and look at page 56, because there's stuff in there. Also, read the chapter on tenacity, because the chapter on tenacity can help you through the deepest, darkest times. My book is very easily read. You can read it in a couple of hours, but the rub is, it takes much longer to integrate it into your life. It takes much longer with all these to make sure that it's going to be a working part of your life. So make sure when you get into it that your life is going to be better as a result of it. And that's why I wrote this book, so everybody can find their joy and purpose in their life, and to make sure that it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens. If I could recover from ALS, and my co-author Harriet can recover from the depression she had from being kidnapped, stabbed, and left for dead. Think of what you can do through the things in your life. Think about the things you can do. You know, all of these are little challenges and road bumps. Right. You know, my father came over as a boy from the Czech Republic when he was 9 years of age. Now, he came over leading his brother, who was seven, and his sister, who was five, all the way from the Czech Republic, all the way across the Atlantic Ocean, all the way across Canada to a little town called Coleman. Now, he did that without speaking a word of English. Now, he did that because he knew he had to go see his father, who was already there, and he knew that he had to do that to get to the promised land, so to speak. That's now, right. You know, you think of the challenges that people have done in your country and mine to make countries great, and to make the challenges that they have gone through to make the things wonderful in their lives. Well, right. You know, they make our challenges seem small sometimes when we look back at the amazing things that they did.
I know. I think I'm thinking of Robert Hershovic. I think he's a Canadian fellow that's on the Shark Tank, and he's Czech Republic and based out of Canada, and just it's kind of a, I hate to say it, I don't want to say an American story because that's not good, but you know, it's just the immigrants that I know, I'm sorry.
And I would say that was the American story until someplace along the way it got waylaid, and somewhere along the way it just got off the path from what, you know, the whole idea was to get better, go to a land and, right. and develop your talents and the land of opportunity was there.
In North America. Yes. For everybody. So, well, I know we're just under 4 minutes. So I want to make sure that we talk about how our viewers and listeners can find you and your book, and please tell us.
Okay. Well, I have my website is Dr. Dr. Allen, Allen Lyka, Lyka, drallenlyka.com. And you can find everything there, including my book. You'll also see some of my podcasts there, How to Live a Fantastic Life. And you can also find my podcast everywhere on the internet. We have hundreds of shows now. And, you know, it's not only a podcast, but it's become a syndicated radio show on a network called AM/FM 24/7. And it has grown to have 5 million listeners a month, Bruce. So it has grown by leaps and bounds. So we
folks, you know, his Dr. Lyka's website, so clean, so well laid out, the press room, maybe you had a coach help you do it, but it's very well done, very easy to navigate, very clean, good visuals on there, great. And what an honor that your staff, reached out. So, kind of one of the best decisions I've ever made, Alan, is having you on the show. So again, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
And Bruce, let me tell you, it's been an honor and a privilege to be on your show. I looked forward for the last weeks because it's been such a great thing to be on your show. And thank you for having me.
My pleasure all the way. So, well, folks, there it is. Another fantastic episode for sure on the Concierge Coaches Show today. Wayne will be with us next week. And don't forget to see us on Instagram, Concierge_Coaches, Facebook, Concierge Coaches Show. And of course, I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. So with that, we'll bid everybody a great and safe and prosperous week. And we'll see you next time here on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Bye, everybody. Thank you, Alan. Take care.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.